From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
The leader of the Islamic State, also known as ISIS, was reportedly killed. It was announced by President Trump on Sunday. For more on that and what it might mean, in Syria and beyond, we spoke with international affairs analyst Mark Sloboda, based in Moscow, via Skype from Moscow, on Monday. So, al-Baghdadi, is this a Osama bin Laden moment? You're going to drop him off from the skies in 1,000 Khashoggi-ized pieces, and he disappears from the earth forever, and it's all better now, or what? Mark?
Yeah, are we starting?
Yes, that was the start. Take that. Go ahead with that.
This is a rather interesting story. So supposedly, the self-declared head of the self-declared Islamic Caliphate al-Baghdadi, an Iraqi citizen originally, who served time in a U.S. overseen prison in Iraq, where infamously ISIS emerged out of, is now dead. Supposedly he has been killed in what the New York Times is describing as a dangerous and daring nighttime raid.
Sounds like they published the Army's press release as a news article. Just a quick question before you get into this deeper. Given that this is ISIS and given, their practice of, chopping heads and rolling them away, is the head of ISIS, who's on the move all the time, considered the rolling head of ISIS? Sorry, I had to do that.
That was egregious.
Sorry about that.
Okay. That was truly an egregious butt. And you have a sick black sense of humor, my friend.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I've been working on it for years.
Yeah.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. Tell. Go ahead. So.
That's why you're my friend.
That's right. That's exactly right. So go ahead.
You bring up an interesting point about the PR nature of this. A reporter for the Washington Post, a longtime reporter on the conflict in Syria, with rather a mixed record, sometimes a bit propagandistic, supporting the U.S. position entirely, and sometimes you catch a really rare moment of truth and actual investigative reporting out of her, is Liz Sly. Liz Sly, right, she is often on the ground, usually, of course, in rebel-controlled territory or so on for the Washington Post.
Right.
And she says that she first received word that there might be an operation from her sources in the government 3.5 months ago. Which, according to at least some accounts, is when they first started getting intelligence on Baghdadi and his location from a disaffected ISIS member who supposedly started working with the Kurds. Mm. And she says she was tipped off as early as then, and that she's been working on his obituary, which she released yesterday in the Washington Post, for months. Now, first of all, that's a stunning bit of PR that a government going to kill what is regarded as one of the world's most dangerous terrorist leaders contacts its official, non-official D.C. establishment newspaper and starts the writing of his obituary months before they actually kill him. That's a rather interesting insight into the way the beast works.
No kidding,
itself, I think.
Yeah.
I certainly think that the relationship between Liz Sly and the government, I have mixed feelings on her reportings. I invite you to take a look yourself. She's Right now, she's on the brunt of social media backlash over some headlines that were attached to some of her articles that she received a lot of heat on for their incorrect nature. And she has been quite upset about this whole thing and her insistence, as most journalists are, that she's not responsible for the headlines, and that the the editors make the headlines, and the article says something quite different from what the headlines were saying.
Right.
And this is all over the Baghdadi affair in Syria and everything. And you know, and to some extent that's true. Although I have always felt that if your editors are publishing headlines that in some ways exploit and directly contradict what you're writing, then you have a responsibility to take the issue up with your editors.
For sure.
And this is a rather interesting story. So anyway, check out Liz Sly in the Washington Post. Check out her social media. Check out her reporting over the last few days, and watch this development, because I'm assuming that what she says is true about her relationship with the government, and they tipped her off to write Baghdadi's obituary so long before this operation took place.
Right.
That's rather interesting in its own regard. And second of all, I think the most interesting thing about where he was killed is where he was killed.
Idlib.
And this is in Idlib, right?
Right.
The Islamic State strength was in, I mean, of course, the Islamic State has filtered overseas by now, and they're diffuse, and they once had territory scattered around Syria in various little enclaves they had seized. At times, remember that, as late as 2014, ISIS was allied with the U.S.-backed Free Syrian Army time.
Right.
They were once a splinter of al-Qaeda, and at one time they worked with al-Qaeda. They were once a splinter of al-Qaeda in Iraq,
right.
And then in Syria they worked with al-Qaeda in Syria under its previous iteration, al-Nusra, and then they had an extreme falling out,
right.
And al-Qaeda and ISIS had become bitter enemies.
Right.
The Free Syrian Army was occasionally fighting ISIS. But at one time, I remember when East Aleppo fell, right? Back in that time period, around 2013, right. ISIS, al-Qaeda, al-Nusra, and the Free Syrian Army all worked together
right.
to seize
right.
East Aleppo.
Yep.
Right? I mean, that was a joint operation. But they all had a bitter falling out, and that has been one of the downfalls of this jihadi rebels. Backed by various Western countries and Gulf countries over the course of this, is they've always been fighting each other.
Yeah, meanwhile, ISIS's strength has been in the other side of the country, right? The stuff closer to Iraq.
Yeah. At least over the last couple of years, when the Islamic Caliphate as a territorial entity was solidified,
right.
It was solidified in Western Iraq
right.
and Eastern Syria.
Right. And Idlib is Western Syria. That's just so people that don't have a map understand this.
Yeah.
This is the other side of Syria.
Al-Nusra, now rebranded as Hayat Tahrir al-Sham.
Right.
HTS, al-Qaeda. Their stronghold was in Western Syria and continues to be there
right.
because they haven't been completely dug out yet in Idlib,
right.
which is northwestern Syria, generally right up in a mountainous, hilly area that's difficult to dig jihadis out of, jihadis out of, right on the Turkish border,
right,
where they continue to receive resupply. Support from the Turkish government. And the Turkish government obviously has an interesting relationship. I mean, you can read numerous accounts that talk about joint patrols between the two
right.
of them, reported by Al Jazeera and others, cooperation.
Right.
But obviously, Turkey would like them to disband and reorganize themselves as Turkish proxies in a official, you know, Turkish proxy uniforms and name.
Well, they had kicked out the Turkish proxies in the battle, right? In 2015, the Ahrar al-Sham, which was Turkey's, one of Turkey's, you know, puppets or whatever, they got kicked out by these guys of Idlib, and they were fighting then, right?
Yeah, Ahrar al-Sham and you know, this al-Qaeda, al-Nusra, Hayat Tahrir al-Sham have had an interesting relationship. Ahrar al-Sham, they basically have the same ideology.
Right.
Their big difference was over Hayat Tahrir al-Sham's insistence for a long time on publicly insisting on continuing their relationship with the head of al-Qaeda. Other than that, they have the exact same ideology, intentions, and so on.
Right.
But during much of this conflict, you know, they broke apart at one point. Ahrar al-Sham supported by Saudi Arabia for much of the conflict. And then they spent much of the conflict occasionally skirmishing, but mostly officially trying to get back together and, you know, and continually having negotiations talked about in public about getting back together. And Ahrar al-Sham is also known for being the favorite terrorist group, or perhaps he's their favorite in Turkey litter, Charles Lister, who has worked for a number of Western think tanks and institutions. You know, support, you know, openly, of course, supporting the overthrow of the government and unofficially, officially working as the official spokesman for Ahrar al-Sham. Well, Ahrar al-Sham and al-Qaeda had a falling out in Idlib. Again, they're already known as Hayat Tahrir al-Sham at this time, even further. And again, this has been one of the great you know, reasons why the Islamist rebels have never didn't completely succeed in overthrowing the government in Damascus is because of their fratricidal nature, always fighting each other. And this has been assisted by the fact that they have different patrons with slightly different interests in Syria and the region, Saudi Arabia, Qatar, Turkey, the U.S., the U.K., even the UAE, Kuwait, Jordan, Israel. At some point, everyone had their fingers in, you know, this 31 flavors of jihad, as I like to call them, all supporting different factions. But also important was control of territory on the ground and the money that went with the territory, the resources found therein, the factories that they were able to strip, oil if it was whatever that was there. And quite often more than real ideological differences, it simply comes down to, you know, leadership struggles amongst these various factions.
Right.
Who has the best source of foreign money, who has the best source of local territory and resources, et cetera. So more like political infighting, really, than anything else, scrambling for leadership among various warlords. And both ISIS and al-Qaeda, al-Nusra, Hayat Tahrir al-Sham, have a record of being very vicious against any other group that challenges them for control of their territory.
Sound like communist parties or leftists anyway.
Yeah, and eventually that happened with each other. There was this big split. Ahrar al-Sham eventually became official Turkish proxies. Yeah. They were kicked out of Idlib, northwestern Syria, by al-Qaeda, al-Nusra, Hayat Tahrir al-Sham. And Hayat Tahrir al-Sham solidified their control of Idlib. Mm. And in their more honest moments, Western journalists will admit that Idlib at this point is completely controlled by Hayat Tahrir al-Sham, al-Qaeda, or two of their closely allied proxies, one of which is the Turkestan Islamic Party, and the other one, which is Haras al-Din. And Haras al-Din is a kind of like the most extremist of Hayat Tahrir al-Sham, like Hayat Tahrir al-Sham al-Qaeda on steroids.
Nice.
And those three groups are basically what controls Idlib at this point. Mm. Whereas, the Islamic State, Daesh, and however you want to call them, in eastern Syria, they also kicked everyone else out of their territory, forced them to either join up or flee for other easier pickings in Syria before their territorial caliphate was destroyed. Really, in a kind of a race between the U.S. and the Kurds on one side, and the Syrian government, Russia and Iran on the other, who simultaneously started really taking apart the Islamic State, particularly after Russia intervened in 2015, and the U.S. obviously started feeling some pressure to really right. make an end to ISIS before Russia and the Syrian government did it all themselves.
Right.
So the Islamic State territorially collapsed. The Syrian government and Russia took most of their territory in the south, whereas the U.S. took their territory in the east of Syria, and there was a real race between them, like who gets to occupy what area, and actually took their capital at Raqqa. And that's where Baghdadi disappeared. And he has been claimed to have been killed four times before this, mostly by the United States. And every time before this, it has proven to be false. Whether he was actually killed this time, I can't say at this time. The U.S. is providing a lot of details, but they also provided a lot of details about the death of Osama bin Laden and that story, including his right. burial at sea, according to Islamic tradition, and then the reality that he was dumped at sea, and oh, that might not really have been him, and he may have died earlier, attached to his dialysis machine. Who really knows? And I don't know if there's a way for us to, know with a high degree of certainty what actually happened. The U.S. is claiming that they have killed Baghdadi, and this time in Idlib. Curiously enough, in very northern Idlib, just 5 miles from the Turkish border. And Turkish bases on the other side of that border. And of course, that is very interesting. One wonders how the leader of the Islamic State, in hiding and running, with enemies everywhere, crossed all of Syria, territory controlled by rival Islamist factions, whom no end of blood has been shilled. Spilled between them in the end, even if they all were once vaguely working together at once, and took refuge in the heart of the territory controlled by the other biggest rival faction at this point, right, which is Al-Qaeda, Tahrir al-Sham, which is fascinating, just that claim. And so close to the Turkish border, how did he get there? How did he get all the way across war-torn Syria with all the different factions, the U.S. and Russia and the Syrian government and Al-Qaeda and everything? Well, I mean, the rather interesting relationship he has had with the Islamic State has had with Erdogan in Turkey, and the porous nature of the border there, and how the Islamic State was continually supplied and managed to get rid of the oil they were holding on to.
And they also painted the Toyotas, those white Toyotas. They painted some camouflage paint on them. That might have helped.
Yeah, I'm sure that was absolutely what did it. Maybe a clown costume too.
And when they run into Turkey to get takeout and stuff, because it's 5 miles away to the nearest McDonald's, they're driving the little truck with the clown suit, and nobody knows who they are. Yeah. You're not.
So
Baghdadi.
It's also interesting that he was killed there, according to the U.S. claims, in the heart of still Al Qaeda controlled Idlib. Right across from the Turkish border. And interestingly, in Donald Trump's very public Twitter claims about this whole thing and the often contradictory statements coming not only from government officials speaking on behalf of the administration, but all the various contradictory leaks from different anonymous officials that have been talked about in the Western press. Some of everyone seemingly contradicting each other, and Trump, and the State Department, and the Pentagon officials. It makes it all extremely confusing to sort out. For their part, Trump thanked it when he was making his presidential statement the other day to the people of the United States. He specifically, first, he thanked Russia. He also thanked Turkey. He thanked the Kurdish forces in Syria and Iraq. He thanked the Iraqi government. And interestingly about all of this, first of all, he thanked Russia.
Right.
The Russian government's official position on this is thank you for what? We didn't help you do anything.
That's right.
And we haven't received any evidence that this actually happened, that this actually
right.
occurred.
Yep.
That Baghdadi, they said there was no airstrikes. They didn't register any airstrikes. Initial reports of this story claimed there were airstrikes. Now that has been walked back for a helicopter raid conducted by some 70 Delta Force personnel that went in on the ground. Russia saying we don't have any complete proof that he was there, that this happened, and that we received lots of contradictory reports, and we certainly didn't help the U.S. do that. Okay, so that's part of what Trump said, cast in doubt right there. On the other hand, he's thanking Turkey, and Turkey has made some quiet nods. But at the other hand, you'll notice that Baghdadi was supposedly killed 5 kilometers from the Turkish border. But the U.S. didn't launch their operation out of Turkey, where they have multiple large military bases. The mission was launched out of Erbil in Iraq.
That's
interesting. And it crossed the entirety of Syrian territory, controlled by Turkish-backed rebels, controlled by Syria in areas by the Syrian government.
And Russian Air Force or whatever, yeah.
And Russian Air Force, and they would have at least had to make a basic deconfliction
right.
statement with Russia, even if they didn't specifically say what they were doing.
So this is interesting.
What I've heard is they simply informed the Russians, we're going to do something that you'll like.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
This is all, rather interesting contradictions. And that's particularly what I'm looking at is who is saying different things and which narrative is coming out on top, because
right.
there have been so many contradictory stories about what actually happened in all of this. Again, we're not going to get a body, evidently. At least according to President Trump, he died running away in a tunnel under the ground, crying and whimpering, begging for his life. Because, of course, that has to be said about the man. Then he fled with some kids
right.
and then blew up a suicide vest and taking out at least one of his wives as well in some accounts. Crying and whimpering and begging for his life before he killed himself with a suicide vest. Because that's usually the way you go out when you kill yourself with a suicide vest, is crying and whimpering for your life rather than yelling, something like Allahu Akbar or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I find this, all very interesting. So we don't have any definitive remains. Supposedly some type of DNA testing was done right on the spot and very quickly determined that it was Baghdadi. Okay, yeah, we heard the same thing with Osama bin Laden. We're not going to get any body. We're not going to get any positive ID. And the U.S. is already, Trump is, of course, celebrating this as his big victory. And there's an open question. Will this now be used by Trump to once again try to push for the complete withdrawal from Syria in a mission accomplished
right.
moment? Because he's done this how many times before? We talked
right.
about it just the last episode about the U.S. announcing their withdrawal, and suddenly they're not withdrawing now.
Right.
moving away from the Turkish incursion in northeast Syria, but now they're doubling down on the occupation of the Syrian oil fields in Deir ez-Zor.
Right. He's got to harmonize what he does now with his criticisms of Obama during the campaign and while some of these things were happening. And you've got, say, you've got the following. One, what are you, stupid? Don't announce when you're going to withdraw troops. Otherwise, you know, they're going to start shooting at them as you try to withdraw them, blah, 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 which is what he had done. And that's supposedly what caused ISIS to appear, was that the U.S. announced it was going to start withdrawing. So there was that one that he had to harm, right, from Iraq. So that he had to, you know, he had to square what's going on.
First of all, to be fair, the U.S. didn't voluntarily withdraw from Iraq.
Of course,
Obama
Iraq said get out.
Tried to keep troops, right, but was kicked out by the Iraqi parliament.
That's right. That's right. So, but there's that. So there's that. There's that thing. There's also aside from that contradiction, there's the statements he made about I would have at least got the oil. And so, yeah, you know, while he's talking about that, he's making a play for the oil and then said, well, you know what? I got the oil for a minute. I threw it into the pot for the negotiations. I swapped it out for this promise and, you know, two box tops and a picture of Willie Mays or whatever. And he says, this is what we got out of this and we're out of there now.
This is amazing because Donald Trump was really insistent that he was pulling out of East Syria this time,
yep,
and didn't want it to be involved. And once again, we were involved and we never should have been there. We need to stop spending money and American lives, and if they right. want to fight each other like kids in a parking lot,
yeah, he went from there to fight each other,
and he seemingly meant it. And then some evil neocon genius, either in the administration or the deep state, said the magic word oil, and
right.
suddenly
right.
Donald Trump is all hot on staying in East Syria, sitting on, you know, again, an illegal occupation force sitting on Syrian oil, right, which
right.
belongs to the Syrian government in Damascus.
Of course.
Preventing them from reconstructing, that is necessary. Syria doesn't produce a huge amount of oil, but
exactly.
they produce enough for their own needs, and there are big shortages in government-controlled areas right now.
And look what it does to the characterization.
Prevent other people from shipping oil to Syria.
Look how it characterizes that whole war, because you're right. Syria is not like a major oil producer, and look at the destruction that's been visited on Syria, only to have it turn out that it was about the oil and not all that much oil.
Again, it helped support their own country, and they had some moderate amount for export to generate hard cash.
I'm just saying, it's a huge, ugly PR hit to take. It's not worth the oil. You could spend the money from the oil undoing that PR hit with a PR firm. That's my point. So I think what he's doing is harmonizing, you know, with his record, so that when this is over, instead of getting accolades, he's not facing, you're a hypocrite. This is exactly what you accused Obama of.
And then I'm not sure that coherency has ever been something that
Trump
worries about. And another big thing, of course, is he previously tweeted, stop celebrating Obama for taking out Osama bin Laden, because it wasn't Obama
right.
who did it.
That's
even
right.
if he did do it, it was the special forces.
Right.
Now he's claiming personal credit for taking out Baghdadi.
Yeah, the things are moving along there for sure. I mean, we have heard an awful lot of stuff about the U.S. doesn't belong in the Middle East in general, that those troops need to come home. And these are things we've never heard from any government official since they got rid of Kucinich and Cynthia McKinney. It's nice to hear it, even if it's from a maniac. So we'll talk about it next week.
Of course, there are no pipelines in East Syria, but the Russian government is now officially accusing the U.S. of international state banditry and being involved in oil smuggling and using that to continue that funds to continue
war,
their black spending, CIA spending,
right.
In Syria.
Wouldn't be the first time. Maybe they could swap it for some dope from Afghanistan. We'll talk to you later, Mark. Thanks a lot.
Thanks for having me, Doc.
Yep. And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.